Hi, and welcome to Baby Bliss Pregnancy Podcast. I'm your host, Lizette. I'm a mom, nurse, and educator, and I'm here to break down the need to know and the want to know about pregnancy, childbirth, and postpartum. As a disclaimer, I am not here to give medical advice. This is for educational purposes only. I encourage you to follow the advice of your physician or provider for any medical decisions related to your pregnancy, birth, and postpartum care. And today we start with episode one. Yay, finally. Thank you guys so much for coming to listen today. Okay, so to let you know how this podcast kind of works, or at least the plan for now, we will see. It probably will change over time, but I want you to find whatever topics are interesting to you out of the episodes, so you don't have to listen to them in order. And we're going to talk about a variety of things, everything from prenatal care, doulas and what they can do for you, postpartum depression or baby blues, talking about adoption. So what's important to you? Let me know. Please reach out on social media and like and follow us, and then comment. What are the questions or topics that you really want covered? Okay, so today we're going to tackle the topic of prenatal care. So we're going to talk about what is prenatal care, how often do you have visits, what are you going to do during those visits, and how to make the most out of each visit. So let's start with what is prenatal care. Prenatal care is the care that you receive during your pregnancy. So a visit with a provider where they assess both you and baby. I think it's really interesting to note that prenatal care has been around since the 1800s. And the more formalized thing that we see today, so when we go to appointments or visit our provider, really came about during the turn of the 20th century. Prior to seeing a physician in an office setting, nurses were the driving force behind prenatal care. They would go do home visits, see a woman and her family, and monitor her and get to know her during that time. So if you haven't seen the show, Call the Midwife, it's a great one. And it really does portray an accurate historical idea of what those visits look like. And there's still places in the world that have nurse visits for prenatal care. Receiving prenatal care started to help reduce maternal mortality. And the purpose of a lot of these visits was really to help with preeclampsia and eclampsia, which is a form of high blood pressure during pregnancy. And we'll talk about those at a later episode. Prenatal care has been determined to be so important that the World Health Organization and a lot of government agencies have put it into their primary initiatives and their goals for women in this country. The focus of prenatal care, so why do we even have it, really is to help determine the woman's individual needs and do an assessment of any of those risk factors for her and for baby, and to monitor both throughout the pregnancy. Prenatal care should also include education. I wish it included more, and I know providers do too. There's just not enough hours in the day, honestly. But education is important, and hopefully that's what I'm here for. Hopefully I can fill in a little bit of the gaps. Also, you want to develop a relationship with the provider, so getting to know who is caring for you. Assessment both of the physical body as well as things like blood draws and urine. Also to provide reassurance to the woman and her partner. How often you have a prenatal visit is a great question. So often you're going to see your provider, by that I mean your physician or midwife, based on how far along you are in the pregnancy. So the ideal appointment would be within the first trimester. Okay, so let's break down pregnancy. It is 40 weeks, it lasts 40 weeks, and it's important to know the number of weeks and days you are pregnant. Yes, in healthcare, we get down to the days because we really get serious about it. But it's important to know how many weeks because that really determines a lot about not only when do you have a visit, but also what to expect during that visit, what the healthcare provider expects for both you and baby. So the first visit ideally will be in the first trimester, which is really in the first 12 weeks of being pregnant. So most women, the second that they get the two pink lines or the clear blue pregnant, they have called the provider. Actually, what we do is we go out and buy 50 more sticks to pee on to make sure that it's right. Then we call our provider. And we're going to want to get in as soon as possible because we're excited or we're anxious or whatever it may be. They want to see you often between 6 and 12 weeks into the pregnancy. So you may have to wait a little bit. They will get you in. And these rest of the visits are really broken down by how far along you are. So if you're not sure how many weeks you are, there's some great apps out there. The What to Expect pregnancy app, the Baby Tracker or the Bump Tracker, those are all great apps that help tell you How far along are you? And maybe some information that you want to know about baby or how big baby is. You know, they'll compare it to the size of a Lego or your favorite fruit. And then also a little bit about what to expect during those weeks related to discomforts or things that you are going to feel that are normal. Your due date is based on the first day of your last menstrual cycle. So the first day of your last period. Now, a lot of times women know that because there's an app for that, right? But if not, then they can help you determine when your closest due date is. Visits after the first one. Okay, so the first visit is the longest, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But after that, you will see your provider every 4 weeks. Yes, that's right. Once a month until you hit week 28. So remember, that's out of 40 weeks. And I know that doesn't seem very often, but you will then start seeing them more frequently. So after 28 weeks, you'll see your provider every 2 to 3 weeks until you hit week 36. From week 36 until week 40, you're going to see them weekly. So obviously you're getting to see them more and more as you get closer to delivery. After 40 weeks, so after you go past your due date, you will see your provider twice a week. So they want to see you more frequently until you give birth. Now, I always want to state right here that this is really dependent on a lot of factors. You may have a different system for when you're going to be seen based on your provider, maybe your geographical location or access to a provider. I know the pandemic caused some variations in how often. Are you low risk or high risk? But this, the model that I've talked about, is really the traditional model that is supported by ACOG. ACOG is the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists that provide those guidelines for prenatal care. The current prenatal care model, remember though, is based on something similar that's been around since the 1930s, 1940s. And what's cool is while the pandemic caused a lot of stress and a lot of heartache for a lot of things, it also caused some great discussion about telehealth or maybe altering how often people are seen if they're low risk and not needing to come in as frequently. So what does a prenatal visit include? Well, the first one is the longest. First, there is a lot of information that they're going to ask you. You are going to be filling out paperwork and or have that iPad there in the waiting room filling out information. They're going to start with when was the last time you had your cycle? Because again, this helps them determine your due date. And if you're not sure, often they'll do an ultrasound of the baby to determine your due date. They're also going to ask a lot of questions about you and your partner. So if your partner can attend this visit, this is probably one of the most important ones for them to attend. They want to know about your overall health and if there's anything that they need to monitor during pregnancy. So like a good example would be if you had high blood pressure before pregnancy, then that was something that they're going to want to monitor during pregnancy because it can be affected. Other examples include things like genetics. Are there any genetic conditions on either you or your partner's side? What do you do for a living? When's the last time you saw a dentist? Exercise. Do you exercise? Do you have any nutritional needs or special diets you follow? Are you vaccinated? Are you having sex and is it monogamous? I know it's really intrusive, but it does help the provider to get a very clear picture of possible risk and what health habits you have, and maybe some areas that they can help provide some education as it relates to pregnancy. So an example would be, you know, there's some people that work with dangerous chemicals, or maybe they work long shifts, like it's a nurse and they're standing and lifting. That's something that the provider wants to know because maybe they need to alter their work based on the pregnancy or when they get further along. Another is if you haven't been to the dentist in a long time. I know, not everybody's favorite. Some people are very dentist averse. I know some of those people. I'm sorry if there's any dentist out there listening. I love my dentist, but they are very important and pregnancy impacts your teeth and your gums. So they may want you to visit a dentist during pregnancy for checkup. You filled out all the information and now what? Well, they're going to ask you to pee in a cup. Expect this to happen at every visit. So if you've got to go, go girl. Because during pregnancy, let's face it, you have to go all the time. Do not sit in the waiting room. Do the pee-pee dance. Go ahead and ask the front desk, hey, where's the restroom? They will have cups and you will leave a urine specimen for them. Your urine can tell them a lot about your health and they're going to test it at each appointment. Next, they'll call you back for your appointment and they will get your weight and your vital signs. So I know for some people that having your weight taken regularly can be uncomfortable, but it's really important to get a baseline for weight to know how much that they recommend you gain during pregnancy. Pregnancy is not a I'm eating for two all in kind of thing. So you want to be really purposeful in your nutrition. Now let's talk about the physical exam. What do you need to plan for? Plan to get naked, at least from the waist down. So this exam is going to include probably a bimanual examination, which is where they put one hand in your vagina and one on top of your abdomen to palpate your uterus and ovaries to make sure everything feels right. And they're going to look at your external genitalia to make sure they don't see anything concerning as well. If appropriate, they also are going to do a pap smear. So if you have never had one of these before, they often do them during well woman appointments, but this is where they put a speculum into the vagina, and a speculum looks like a little duckbill thing, can be plastic or metal. They put it into the vagina and it just helps to pull the walls of the vagina open a little bit so they can visualize and access the cervix. The cervix is the lower portion of the uterus, and this is the part that actually opens to allow the baby to come through the vagina for a vaginal delivery. During a pap smear, they are going to take a brush. Don't think hairbrush, not a hairbrush. They do a small little brush and collect some cells from your cervix to make sure that there's no abnormal cell growth there. They may also perform a breast exam as well. I know. Then you're getting completely naked for this person you just met. I know that you don't get naked for people all the time, but remember, I'm telling you things not to scare you. If these type of exams make you nervous, then just to help you mentally and physically prepare. So one of the funniest stories I've heard, and I don't really know where I heard it from, was this woman was doing her ritual to prepare for going to see her OB-GYN. And I know we all have that routine, right? So you shave or you clip and you want to make sure everything smells good, so you're showered. You might wear some socks so you have warm feet, or wear underwear that looks nice and isn't the holy pair, which is always funny because then, you know, we inevitably like fold it up into the clothing, like hiding it like it's our shame, even though this person's about to be all up in your business anyways. So anyways, she was doing her ritual to prepare and sprayed some body perfume to smell better down there. For the exam, she was undressed from the waist down and the doctor had her scoot her bottom to the end of the table and she was up in stirrups. And normally during this time, the provider will take a light and shine it on you. And this helps them to visualize better. And the doctor got a little surprised, a little show, because apparently she used glitter spray. Can you imagine? I mean, I'm a mom of girls. I hate glitter. It's like my worst enemy, that and slime. But if you can imagine a glittery vagine, that would probably make me absolutely laugh. I'm sure that was shining like a diamond. Okay, let me break this down also. As a nurse that worked in a clinic, we see vulvas all the time. Imagine seeing 10 to 30 women 5 days a week. We know that there is a mild to normal musky smell to them. Hair comes in all shapes, designs, lengths, colors, all that kind of stuff. People have tattoos, people have piercings. There's all kinds of things going on. So I hope you realize that we've usually seen it all. Next, they will perform an ultrasound. So some providers perform this ultrasound themselves, while others have an ultrasound tech in the office that'll do it for them. Depending on how early you are in your pregnancy, they may perform a transvaginal ultrasound. So this means putting a wand into your vagina to see the fetus. No, not Harry Potter. We are not wizarding anything. They put the wand in, and that's what it's actually called. So it goes into the vagina just a bit. And the reason is because the fetus is so small and your uterus is so small that they can't perform an abdominal ultrasound and see enough, okay? It shouldn't cause pain. It may be a little uncomfortable, but if it causes pain, tell them. Now, if you're further along in the pregnancy, they will do an ultrasound on the abdomen, which is probably what most of y'all have seen in movies or TV shows, or maybe even had for other reasons. Okay, let me stop right there. Movies and TV shows and social media do not portray pregnancy, labor, birth, or postpartum accurately. Can we all agree on this? For the most part, it is very inaccurate. In fact, I'm part of several social media labor and delivery groups in which there are nurses that'll screenshot something to post because it's so hilarious how poorly it's been done. So if there are any movie execs or producers that are listening, you know, because my famous number one episode that's out there. I'm available for consulting on any of your shows to help you out. Okay. So going back to the ultrasound, they're looking at the fetus to make sure it's in the right place. And they're looking at structures, everything that's important to the pregnancy. And they also can see and hear the heartbeat. It should look like a little flutter, a very quick flutter, actually. Fetus's heartbeat is a lot faster than an adult's. And hopefully they can turn on the audio for you so you can hear the heartbeat. It's really cool. Now, don't be surprised if early in your pregnancy, your baby looks like a little gummy bear or doesn't look like much of anything at all. That's normal, especially very early on. Another part of your visit will be to have blood taken, or they're going to send you to a lab to have blood taken. So it's really important to get this information and make sure you stay hydrated so that they can get blood from you. They're going to get everything from your blood type and Rh. So for example, if you are A positive or O negative, so this is important for them to know. Also, are you anemic, which means you have a low red blood cell count? They're going to test for a number of diseases like syphilis, rubella, HIV. And I know what some of y'all are thinking. I do not need to be tested for STDs. I'm with one person. We're monogamous. Yes, I completely understand. However, not only are there some state requirements related to testing depending on where you live, these are also recommendations because really, just in case, let's say something did happen, then it would be so important to know, not just for you, but for the baby as well, because babies can really be impacted. They also are going to discuss with you during this appointment genetic testing. Now, this is not something for everyone. Not everyone needs it or wants it. It can be expensive if it's not covered. There is a really cool ever-evolving list of what's tested or included or what they offer. So make sure and do your homework. After you've had the conversation with your provider, go home, talk it over with your partner, and figure out what's covered. How much is it? What information do you get? For some people, this information really is not helpful. It doesn't change anything that happens with their pregnancy or their expectations. But for others, a major genetic problem may mean the end of the pregnancy. Some get genetic testing because they're higher risk. So for example, I was pregnant at 41. I was definitely considered higher risk. Anyone 35 and older is considered, that's one of the risk factors. So for me, it was just a personal choice to have genetic testing done. So another thing you're gonna do is set up your next appointment before you leave. Remember, frequency depends on how far along you are or what else is going on. I often would set up 2 or 3 appointments if possible, and that way I can coordinate with my partner to make sure he was there based around his work. All the subsequent visits after that are a lot shorter, right? So we just talked about the first one. There is a lot that goes on, but the other appointments are a lot shorter. Now, they all include you giving a specimen of your pee. So again, no pee-pee dance required. Go let it fly free in the bathroom, of course. They're gonna weigh you. They're gonna take your vital signs. Then they're gonna listen to baby's heartbeat, and they're gonna measure your uterus to see if it's growing. So they're gonna have you lay on the exam table and literally measure on your abdomen how big the uterus is getting. So if you've seen people that are early in pregnancy, they may not have much of an abdomen or belly, pregnancy belly. And further along, they grow. That uterus grows as the baby grows. And as it does, it grows what we call up out of the pelvis. So if you think of it towards your head, you know, it's growing up into the abdomen. And so we want to make sure it's growing appropriately, because if it's growing well, that lets us know the baby or babies are growing well. So they will measure that. Other visits also, it really just depends on how far along you are. I know I've said that a couple of times, but maybe it's the week that they're going to test you for gestational diabetes, or around 18 to 20 weeks, you're going to have an anatomy ultrasound. So this is a longer ultrasound looking at different parts of the baby's body and measuring things. They can also tell the gender of the baby at that gestational age. So if you didn't get genetic testing, they'll let you know the gender of the baby, as long as baby does not hide the goods. We look for hamburger or hot dog. Okay. Sometimes they hide it though. If you've had genetic testing, you'll already know the gender of the baby. A lot of people are surprised they don't get an ultrasound at every appointment, but first off, it's not necessary. And next, it's expensive. So it's done at the beginning and then halfway through to make sure everything looks good. And then some women never have another ultrasound. Others may have them more frequently because they're higher risk. Maybe they have multiples, or they're just high risk due to illness. Sometimes you have one done later in the pregnancy to look at the placenta or the position of the baby. You also can choose to have a 3D ultrasound. They're not performed at the office usually and cost out of pocket, and they need to be performed during a certain number of weeks gestation. So if you're too far along, they may not do it. And they're just for fun. They are not for medical purposes at all. as you get closer to your due date or your delivery date, during your appointments, they also will start to do pelvic exams. So this includes putting two fingers or a finger into the vagina, and they're going to reach and examine the cervix. Remember the cervix that we talked about. And if you're not sure about a cervix or want to know what one looks like, definitely take to YouTube. There's plenty of videos. I would warn you, do not have any children in the room when you Google these things, and clean your browser out afterwards. I had to learn this the hard way during the pandemic when you teach maternity and you have to Google things so you can show them virtually. I had a lot of interesting videos come up. Not all providers will do a pelvic exam and not all patients want one done, but this can help the provider to ascertain, is the cervix starting to do what it needs to? Is it getting ready for labor? And we can talk about all the calisthenics that the cervix does to prepare for birth on a later podcast. Okay, so let's talk about how to make the most of your visits. Here's just a couple of things that I recommend. First, come with questions. Now, I will tell you, I am completely guilty of going to my doctor's appointment, having a great visit, chatting, she assesses me, and I'm halfway home and I'm like, holy Moses, I completely forgot to ask that one darn question. It's always something non-life-threatening, right? But something that I wanted to talk to her about in person. So do me a favor and keep your pad of paper in the car, in the kitchen, by your bed, or use your phone. I don't care. I'm old school. And write any questions down that you or your partner have as soon as you think of them, because pregnancy brain is real and you'll forget. So this will help you from missing anything. And ask whatever's on your mind so that you don't stress unnecessarily. I quite often would have patients come into labor and delivery and they have been stressing about something or another that if they'd asked their provider, they wouldn't be worried about anymore. Next, when you talk to your provider at the first visit, let them know what your needs and wants are for prenatal care and labor and birth. It is okay if you don't know right now. I get it. It can be overwhelming. However, some women already know what they want or don't want. So maybe they really want to try to have a vaginal birth. Maybe they want to go into labor on their own, or they want a water birth, or they want an epidural and all the drugs. Maybe they know their partner's going to be deployed close to their due date and they want to come up with a plan. There's tons of reasons to have this discussion. So this is the time to determine if you and your provider have differing ideas on your care instead of halfway through the pregnancy or, heaven forbid, during birth. I would also ask, who are the partners in the call group? For some people, they only want maybe a female provider for birth, but maybe there's a male provider in the call group. So guess who may be on the day you go in, of course. Think about it. Physicians and midwives have tons of patients and they can't be on call 24/7 for all of them. That is unrealistic. So they have a group or a call group. And what that means is that there's a group of physicians or midwives that have taken on each day so that if you go in and you're in labor, they call whoever is on for that day. Some groups actually rotate the providers on who's going to see you for each prenatal visit. So you may go in one day for a prenatal visit and see one physician and the next day see a different. And that may help to get to know each provider a little bit better. This is not always the case. Next, make sure and listen and write down notes. I know I've mentioned notes a lot, but I'm serious. Take notes. It's okay. Because by the time you walk back out to the car, you have forgotten, like, what did she say? Or what did he say about that? Next, don't be afraid to speak up. If they are doing something to your body or asking something you aren't comfortable with, first ask the why question. Why is it needed? Why is it important? Most of the time, once we know why, it makes us feel a lot better about what's going on and we understand the importance. However, if you get an answer that you're not okay with, it's your body, so say no. Now, there's a caveat to this. Your provider can also say no. But like I said, if you have philosophical differences related to birth care, now's the time to know. Now's the time to have a respectful conversation. And I ask you to do it in a respectful manner because you may really have some strong opinions, but maybe the provider has to follow hospital policy that you may not know about, or maybe they're not comfortable or trained on what you're asking. So having that conversation early and realizing whether it's a fit or not is important. So lastly, when talking about prenatal visits, enjoy the time. It seems like forever, and trust me, at 7 months postpartum, I can tell you it flies by. And not all women, I understand, enjoy being pregnant, but at least if nothing else, marvel in what our bodies can do. One last thing. If you're listening and found even one little nugget of information helpful, please do me a huge favor. Leave us a rating or review on whatever platform you're listening to the podcast. I really would love the feedback. I want to make this podcast as helpful as I can for you. Like and follow us on social media and be sure to share with your friends. And if you have any topics that you want covered or questions, I don't care how big or small, be sure to comment on social media and let us know or email me at babyblisspodcast@gmail.com. I'm also going to leave some references and resources in the show notes just for you to look over. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you lasted to the end with me. I am going to work on my microphone skills, I promise. And have such an awesome day.